Hello, Lifebook members. John Butcher here. Welcome to another episode of Lifebook's 12 Category Smart Millionaire series. So happy to have you here with me today. Today we're going to be talking to a guy named Dave Steck, who's founder and CEO of Purpose Built Investments. Now, Dave grew up in a trailer park, and he had a difficult time, he had a hard road, but he pulled himself out of his dire circumstances and graduated from Purdue University, and later he went on to the London School of Economics. He was in senior management for both Kodak and Disney, two pretty big companies, and he became a self-made millionaire who retired early three separate times. Now he speaks annually at the Harvard Business School to more than 2,000 business and government leaders worldwide. And Dave's firm, Purpose Built Investment, it's kind of a legend in its space because they're known for selling their entire real estate holdings in 2005 right before the peak and then quietly getting back into the market in 2009 right before the bottom. So he's got a pretty strong win-loss record. As a matter of fact, Dave's reported win-loss record over the last 3 years in real estate is 1,221-1. That's pretty amazing. His clients have never lost a penny. And they range from self-directed IRA holders to high net worth individuals in both the U.S. and abroad. This guy really knows what he's talking about, not only when it comes to real estate, but when it comes to money. You're going to really enjoy this interview. It's my pleasure to welcome Lifebook member Dave Steck. Hello, Dave. Welcome.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you here, my friend.
It's always wonderful to be invited to be part of the Lifebook Community Communication Plan. And I can tell you, for what you've done for me in terms of my having attended Lifebook and practicing many of the principles that you preach, and for my sons, who I asked to go to Lifebook after me, it's been life-changing. And anything I can do to help you, I'm always willing to do.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. I'll tell you, the last interview I did with you, the last financial interview, was one of the favorites with our Lifebook community. They just really, really got a lot of value out of that. So I'm excited about this interview, too.
Well, you've set the expectations in the bar a little high, haven't you?
Yeah, but you're going to exceed them. I know you will. So let's start just real quick with a brief overview of what your career path has been, especially around, you know, wealth creation and money, Dave. Just why don't you give us a sort of a 50,000-foot view?
Well, I started out in a trailer park, and I think you know that story. We just didn't have anything, and I spent 20% of my life in that trailer park trying to figure out how to get out of it, and I ended up, fortunately, going to college. My mom was one of 10 kids. My dad was one of four, and the 14 siblings had 60 children, and for whatever reason, I was the only one to go to college, and from there, I ended up going into corporate America, first with Kodak and first with Disney, and had some firsts, as it were, in terms of launching the first disposable camera and the first digital postcard. So that went pretty well, except that I couldn't be rich working for somebody else. So I ended up becoming an entrepreneur and had some internet companies and that sort of thing. And three early retirements later, I did what I'm doing now, which is to invest my money and to basically figure out the vehicle to be able to win the money game. So right now, I don't have to do anything, but I get the luxury of being able to do whatever I want to do, and that includes being on a call with you today.
Nice. So when you think back on all the way back to the trailer park, Dave, and your entire journey, what would you say is one of the single most important things that you've learned about money, about wealth creation, or about finances?
You know, and you know this, but that's pretty much up my alley now. Most of my life, I'd say 90-95% of my life, I thought I knew what I was doing in terms of progressing financially, but it was really only the last 5 or 10% of my life when I cracked this code on what I call the money game. I just look at money and creating wealth as a game. I mean, it's a dead serious game, but it's still a game, and there are really only three secrets to winning it, in my opinion. A, you've got to generate cash, otherwise known as income. B, you've got to accumulate wealth, otherwise known as assets that produce income and go up in value. And then lastly, you got to figure out a way to keep both. Mm-hmm. In other words, you got to be in the position to keep the cash you make and the wealth that you accumulate, or you don't make any progress at all. So the problem is, while that's a simple philosophy, it's just not easy. And the reason is even simpler. 99% of people aren't successful keeping it. In fact, only 1 out of 100 people in America is wealthy, and it's because they either lose it or they have someone like a stockbroker lose it for them, which happened in my case, or the government takes it. I don't know if you know this. In fact, most recently I spoke on this topic of trying to keep it, and I basically researched it and found that 98.7% of the average person's wealth over a lifetime is stripped by compound taxation. In other words, the taxation that you have every year compounded over a lifetime. So you basically keep 1.3% of what you could have made if you weren't taxed. So what's the single most important thing I've ever learned?
1.3%? Are you being serious right now?
Yeah, absolutely dead serious. Yeah, it's really sad. And so when you ask, what's the single most important thing I've learned about, you know, money or wealth? It's really simple. It's not how much you make. It's how much you keep. And keeping what you make is what makes you wealthy.
Man, I can relate to that in my career. That is for sure. And it's not, you know, it's not an easy thing for most people. It wasn't for me to figure out, you know, the tax strategy and everything you've got to figure out in order to keep more of your wealth. Making money came easy for me because of the value creation process. And, you know, I did okay, not great at accumulating assets, but it was keeping it that was the difficult. It took me years and years to get the right team in place and to get the right strategies in place, and I'm still not optimized in that area.
Yeah, I can only tell you, and I admitted it right up front, 80 to 90% of my life, I was doing what everybody else did and what I thought I should be doing and what my parents instructed me based on their limited knowledge of financial skills and planning, and I just didn't get it. And it was only after I had the luxury of early retiring the third time and then realizing I need to really figure this game out, not for me, but for my kids. Mm-hmm. And once I had a bigger why than me, I dug deep and I figured out some of the stuff I'm telling you.
Nice. Okay, let's go on to question number two. This is a fun one, and I've gotten some really amazing answers to this question. I'm excited to hear yours. What's the biggest financial mistake you've ever made, Dave?
Well, that's a pretty easy one for me, too. I mentioned growing up in a trailer, and when I was in a trailer or in that trailer park, I developed what I call this hungry, burning desire to be filthy, stinking rich. And I wanted it so badly, and I wanted to be a millionaire because that's what everybody wanted to be, that I created this plan. This was way before spreadsheets. I actually had one of these pieces of graph paper that I carried around in a day timer, and my plan was twofold. This is how simple it was, or at least how simplistic I was. My plan was twofold. Save as much as I could in my 401k, as much as was legally allowable to set aside, and number two, pay off my home free and clear. That was my plan. That was my millionaire plan. Had it all charted out, and by 61.2 years old, I was going to be a millionaire. I had it all figured out, and it worked. I mean, I literally updated this graph every quarter, and while I didn't get to the 61.2 mark yet, I made progress every quarter, and then I made that costly mistake you just asked me about. I left corporate America to be an entrepreneur. That was the good news. And a well-meaning friend introduced me to his broker. That was the bad news. And true to his title, he actually made me broker. The guy was with Merrill Lynch, and he lost $250,000 of my hard-earned, save every penny you can, 401k in the same year that their CEO was fired and received $161 million severance package. $250,000 of that was mine. So to answer your question, my biggest financial mistake was really assuming that someone else cared as much about my money as I did. And I learned that the only thing that Wall Street and their employees ever care about is earning commissions, fees, and bonuses. And they earn them whether you make money or you lose money. So I only know this with clarity because when we did our very first investment fund for investors, I decided that we'd charge zero fees, that we'd only be paid when we made money for our investors, not when we invested it, and that our money would be the first money in the fund, and that our investors would be paid first. I basically did the exact opposite of what Wall Street was doing.
Exactly.
And in the last 2.5 years, we've now made 1,222 investments, and our win-loss record as of the end of last month was 1,221-1, and I'm still pissed about that
one.
Not
bad. Oh, that's better than the market, right?
Yeah, it all comes from caring more about your investors' money than you care about your own. Mm. And it's completely the opposite of what you've been taught about caring for your own. But by accident, you have to care about yourself.
That was a painful lesson, I'm sure, and I'm also sure it's probably tied very closely to my next question, which is, what was the best financial move you've ever made?
As a matter of fact, it is tied to that. The best financial, and you and I talked about this last year, my best financial move was moving my 201k, which was actually my 401k before Merrill Lynch got a hold of it, and moving it before I was eating Special K. So I actually moved that 401k and what was left of it to a self-directed Roth IRA. You remember that discussion we had about this last year?
Absolutely.
Well, there were two lessons in this whole learning experience for me and the best financial move I made. The first was that 97% of Americans have no clue that you can self-direct your own retirement account instead of having a broker invest everything you own in the stock market. In a self-directed IRA, you can invest in anything except life insurance and collectibles. So I happen to direct my IRA custodian to invest my funds in real estate deals and private lending deals to real estate investors. But you could do anything. In fact, I don't know if I told you this story last year, but a guy that I know actually bought in his self-directed IRA a stud bull, and the bull services, as you might expect, and all of the fees from servicing the cows actually go into his self-directed IRA.
That's
so
amazing.
His only hope is that the bull hangs around for a long time.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so anyway, that was the first lesson. The second one was real simple. If you're going to do this, do a Roth self-directed IRA, because traditional 401ks and IRAs are tax-deferred, which is great. The problem is they're not tax-free. So all of this is established by law, but no one really knows that you can self-direct your own money. And for me, it's my absolute secret weapon. And the last sort of reason that it's my secret weapon is that my sons can inherit my Roth tax-free. So it's the, I don't know of another vehicle like it, John, honestly, and I don't sell these things. I just use them as my vehicles. So I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I don't know if you've what you've done on your front, but I know we talked about that last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I've gone to a QRP, which is a qualified retirement plan, which is pretty much the same thing. I completely direct my own IRA. And I have a lot of it in gold and silver, and although I can't get out, there's still a chunk of it that they won't let me get out because it was contributed in a certain way. So, I mean, I wonder if I could move that chunk to a Roth.
How's it feel to be able to direct your own money?
It's awesome. It's sitting up in my closet.
It's great.
I love it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I view it as liberation, because when you don't know what you don't know, you do what other people do, and that's 97% of what Americans do. They turn
exactly.
it over to Wall Street, and that's that. And, oh, by the way, most of them lose it, and we all know those stories. But when you have your own control, you're the only one to point your finger at.
Yep.
And for us, I'm not going to say what our annualized return is, but I always joke that it's three things. It's embarrassing, ungodly, and obscene.
That's where everyone wants to be. Okay, here's the next question. What is your current favorite financial strategy?
I would say this is a really important one to me, because this is one of those things I figured out in the last 5% of my life, and what an idiot I was for not having figured it out sooner. The answer is have the courage to be contrarian. And let me explain that. If you look at the statistics that are published by the Census Bureau, out of every 100 people that start work at 25, by the time they reach retirement age, 65, 1% is wealthy. One person is wealthy. Four have adequate savings to retire. Five have to continue working. 29 are dead, and 63 are the equivalent of dead broke, which is defined as being dependent on Social Security or friends, relatives, or charity. So let's think about that just for a second. If only one is wealthy, and I know what category you're in, and I know what category I'm in, and only four have adequate savings, that's 5% of Americans who have what I call financial freedom. And that should be everybody's goal on this call. The other 95% will never, ever have it. So if you don't want to be like the 95%ers, here's a concept. Don't do what they do. So, for example, I've got a real estate investment fund, and I got out of the market, as you know, in 2005 when everybody was getting in, and then I got back in 2008 when everyone was getting out, and we've done really, really well. I realize that it's all about having the courage to be contrarian, whether it's in gold and silver, which you like, or art, which you like, or real estate or private lending, which I like. You've got the courage to be contrarian. That's the first step. And the second is to take action on your courage. Because the only way I finally got out and got into the financial freedom category is by doing what everybody else didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worked for me.
Nice. Okay, here's the last question. I love this one. We've gotten some amazing answers to this, and it's interesting because everyone's got a different path. Everyone has different answers, but some powerful sort of patterns are emerging, Dave. I'm really anxious to hear your take on this. So when you think all the way back to the trailer park, everything that you went through from then till now, if you had one piece of financial advice that you could share with people that you've learned on your journey, what would that piece of advice be?
Well, you know, I talked earlier about this notion of the money game, and I'm not trying to make it trivial or minimize it. I just believe that there's this game that we all play. And the one thing is to play the game well. It's another thing to play it with other people well. So you've heard me say this before, but I'm all about working with fewer, better people, not the masses of asses. It's that power of six concept that you've heard me talk about. And here's the thing. You always hear people say your net worth is equal to your network, and that's horribly misleading because it's not about the size of your network. It's only about the quality of your network. Your network should be so small that you can have deep relationships with the fewer better people that deserve to be in your life, and you should have these filters to choose them. So Lifebook members may have heard me talk about this on that Power of Six thing that you and I did. And here's our six filters, which I hope everybody will listen to. You know, I just think it's really powerful because it took me a few years to figure this out. We don't work with people with uncontrolled egos. We don't work with people with uncontrolled greed. We don't work with people who can't be implicitly trusted. We don't work with people who aren't the best at what they do. We don't work with people who don't play to win and always cross the finish line, and we don't work with people we don't like. So when I spoke at Harvard last year on the Power of Six, a guy raises his hand from the audience and says, "So how the hell do you find anyone to work with?" And I said, "Here's the deal. There aren't many people that meet those six filters, but I don't need many people."
Right.
I mean, seriously, how many John Butchers do I need in my life? One. Now, six of them would be fabulous, and that's what I strive to have, is six people like you. And that's it. Any more than that is dilutive, because I can't have deep relationships with that many people. So what's that oil all kind of boil back to? So my way of thinking is that if you create a group of people who are, in the case of finance, or the financial month we're talking about here, dedicated to winning this money game, which is what we have, We created these three mastermind groups. Remember, you and I talked about this last year.
Absolutely.
And we did it because I was just passionate about doing this with other people. So now we can literally turn on the money faucet because we've all got people focused at the same time on doing things together who meet those six filters. We're creating not only financial success for ourselves, but future generations of winners. So in short, we don't just make money, we matter. And mattering is where you are in your life and where I am in mine.
I love it. I love that answer because I'll tell you, everything I've ever learned about money, about wealth creation, I've learned from my friends, from my network, from a very close network of really smart people. I didn't learn any of this in school. I didn't learn any of it at seminars, or I've literally learned from the people that I've hung out with and that I've spent time with. So I can really, really back that up for sure.
Well, and I dare say that you happen to, whether you knew it or not, were very selective in your friendships and your professional relationships, or I promise you, you would not be where you are today. Mm-hmm. Because you don't become as successful as you have by accident. And it took me most of my career to figure that out. And now that I've figured it out, my goal is to teach my kids and to talk with you and others who want to talk about that, because the whole goal is, I always tell people I've had the luckiest life in the world because I've gone through three stages: survive, thrive, and matter. So it's pretty cool to be able to survive. I mean, most people don't. 95%, and then to be able to thrive and then to matter. I mean, I'm the luckiest guy on the planet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate you spending this time with me, and I know all of our listeners do too. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for having made a difference in my son's life. It's one thing to have done something for me. I'm always grateful for that. But by extension, to have helped my sons, who I sent back to Lifebook after I went through it, I mean, it's changed their life, because as my son said the other day, he's now designing his life. He's not living it by the accident he was before he met Lifebook. So that's powerful stuff for me.
Thank you so much for the kind words, and I'll tell you, Lifebook has given me a way to matter. So I could not be more thankful and grateful. Thanks again, my friend. We'll talk soon.
And to you, John. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.